Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. We're just going to continue on with this radical rant all about the hemp seed oil hucksters. $175 a gram on the website. You're a desperate parent in Oklahoma. You know that it's legal to have the damn stuff, but you don't know where to get it. So you go on the internet, and here's this guy selling you a $175 a gram bottle that you can buy, and he says it's perfectly legal. Yeah. All right, so where we left off is the DEA, in their update today, said it is not practical to produce extracts that contain more than trace amounts of cannabinoids using only the parts of the cannabis plant that are excluded from the Controlled Substances Act definition of marijuana. They're saying there are no cannabinoids in hemp stalks. There are no cannabinoids in hemp seed oil, at least not to the degree that they would be of any use. They say only parts per million can be found, and in that case, it's because resin from the plant, you know, trichomes, sticky icky, are sticking to the stalk or sticking to the seeds, and that's where it's coming from. So they're actually not getting it from the stalk itself or the seed itself, but from what's sticking to the seed. And the problem with that is that the Ninth Circuit Court in that 2004 decision about the hemp seed oil and the hemp lotions and stuff said, quote, "When Congress excluded from the definition of marijuana mature stalks of such plant fiber and oil or cake made from the seeds, it also made an exception to the exception and included resin extracted from the accepted parts of the plant in the definition of marijuana, despite the stalks and seed exception." So even if what Medical Marijuana Inc. says is correct, that they're just getting their CBD from the stalks or the seeds, DEA is saying the only place you'd be getting that is from the trace parts per million of resin that's stuck to it, and resin is the exception to the exception, regardless of the stalks and seeds exception. It's still illegal. Now, confounding this issue further is the 2014 Farm Bill. Section 7060, I think it is, of the Farm Bill. The exceptions that the DEA and Medical Marijuana Inc. are talking about are exceptions to the definition of marijuana, as it is in the Controlled Substances Act. The defenders of hemp-derived CBD are arguing that the Farm Bill defined industrial hemp as cannabis plants with less than 0.3% THC. So, quote, and this is from one of their websites, "Hemp that is cultivated in accordance with the Farm Bill is expressly legal, and extracts from such a plant are legal." Well, okay, that's true on its face. Hemp cultivated in accordance with the Farm Bill is legal. But it's Section 7606. My bad. Section 7606 of the Farm Bill states that only, quote, "an institution of higher education or a state department of agriculture may grow or cultivate industrial hemp if allowed under the laws of the state," end quote. It does define low THC cannabis as industrial hemp, but since the section begins with a "notwithstanding the Controlled Substances Act," the Controlled Substances Act prescriptions against all parts of the plant Cannabis sativa L still apply to the non-higher education and the non-state ag department cannabis farms, especially the ones in Europe. So the Farm Bill argument would work if here in Oregon, one of our licensed hemp farmers grew a whole bunch of hemp and made cannabis hemp oil from it you know, extracted CBD from it, even from the leaves and flowers. And pretty well, it would be legal under state law, but not under, well, now it's difficult, right? I don't think it'd be legal. I think it'd be legal under federal law as well, because again, under the farm bill, if you're growing at less than 0.3% THC and you're a university or state ag department, it ain't marijuana anymore. Anyway, what happens to cannabis oil now? What happens to this whole CBD oil now? Well, it's anybody's guess as to whether the DEA will want to flex its muscles to enforce prohibition of CBD oil. I mean, there's still doubt as to whether the Sessions Department of Justice will go after marijuana containing THC used by adults who like to get high. I believe the prospect of local news reporting on the DEA busting stores that sell CBD products that don't get people high to desperate parents of severely debilitated kids for medical purposes, that's probably damaging enough to public relations that the DEA won't go that route. But I also believe that the DEA filing injunctions against the companies manufacturing European-sourced CBD products and issuing warrants for the seizure of their records, inventory, and assets, I don't think that's too far-fetched. If Congress fails to pass H.R. 715, that's a bill that's before Congress right now that would remove cannabidiol from the Controlled Substances Act, and it would reschedule marijuana out of Schedule 1, well, then yes, the next path for legal cannabidiol products would be the states that are currently growing hemp in accordance with the Farm Bill. Because in the DEA's pronouncement today, they do say, quote, if a product such as oil from cannabis seeds consisted solely of parts of the cannabis plant excluded from the Controlled Substances Act definition of marijuana, end quote, it would not be classified as marijuana, marijuana extract, or even a tetrahydrocannabinol. Now, in Oregon, I've interviewed licensed hemp farmers who are doing just that. Rather than cultivate varieties of hemp prized for seeds or fiber, they're working on maximizing the flower production of low THC cannabis to produce and boost its CBD content for medical extracts. I mean, I have no issue with adults who wish to produce, buy, and sell any drug. What you choose to do with your body and mind is solely up to you. However, companies that exploit the desperation of patients of epileptic kids by selling them CBD oil at jacked up prices while claiming those parents aren't breaking the law, well, I do have a bit of a problem with that. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got a kid in Oregon, a teenager, who's trying to take down our marijuana billboards. That story and more when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This place is a dump, man. You ain't gonna make no money in here. You don't know nothing.
I don't know nothing? I know that this is rotten. I know that I don't see no people in here.
So where's your gold mine?
It's down the street, man. The school.
The school? Oh, I see. You're gonna get rich on selling gum to school kids.
Not gum, man. This. For $10, the little snot noses can blow their heads off. The little brats are dying to fry their brains. And I'm only too happy to help them.
So where do they get the money?
Who cares where they get it? As long as they get it.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I do support the use of medical marijuana, and I think even there, we need to do a lot more research.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Cool.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 10 after the hour here in beautiful legal potland, Oregon. I wanted to bring you some news from potland that is coming from our local station, K2. If I can get it to play. It doesn't look like it's one of those deals. Okay. It's not a deal. All right. We're doing it live, damn it. We're doing it live. So the story here on K2KATU.com is on a 14-year-old who's pushing lawmakers for stricter pot advertising laws. Yeah, okay, so like all throughout Portland, we've got billboards. We got billboards for weed. We got billboards for weed maps. We got billboards for dispensaries. We got billboards for shatter. We got billboards for vape pens. We got billboards with buds on them. We got billboards with plants on them. We got just some billboards. And this 14-year-old named Eddie is concerned that marijuana billboards and banners may encourage marijuana use in minors. Yeah, because marijuana needs to be like promoted. Like nobody's ever heard of it. Nobody knows what it does. We need to advertise it. What was it, Chris Rock that said, you don't sell drugs, drugs sell themselves. Anyway, Herzig, the kid, Eddie Herzig's his name, acknowledges there are no credible studies linking marijuana advertisement to minors' use of marijuana. But he says the big, flashy, colorful billboards are being noticed by his peers. Quote, these are things that are made to attract attention. It's attracting the attention of kids, too. And he's worried about it because he got the idea last year when his younger sister saw all these signs and posters in downtown Portland about marijuana.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
So he says, quote, that's not something that she needs to be exposed to quite yet. If she is seeing it, I'm trying to imagine who else has also seen it or even being persuaded by it at a younger age. End quote. Eddie would like to see the marijuana advertising laws more closely aligned to those in the tobacco industry, where signs can only be displayed in certain areas, text must be a certain color, and it can't be advertised on billboards. He says, you can't do advertising, billboard advertising on cigarettes, so why should we be allowing it on cannabis products? End quote. Now, part of the problem here is where the hell are we supposed to advertise? The FCC doesn't allow marijuana ads on television or radio. This kid's talking about treating it like tobacco so there'd be no billboard advertising. A lot of magazines won't take tobacco ads, and where tobacco ads can be placed is heavily dependent on the makeup of the audience. Now, Washington State already has stricter rules on marijuana advertising. They're not allowed to advertise within 1,000 feet of the perimeter of a school ground, playground, recreational center, child care center, public park, library, game arcade. Jesus. Washington also restricts ads on or in a public transit vehicle, public transit shelters, or on or in a publicly owned or operated property. So, Eddie closes in this piece by saying, quote, there are some regulations on where the dispensaries can't be, but there's nothing really on where the advertising can be, end quote. All right, so this is an area where politically you want to compromise a little, because the what about the children thing is such a prominent scare. Because, yeah, we don't allow tobacco advertising in those particular places. But the thing that gets me is that there's no similar call on the alcohol advertising. Now, I'm not real familiar with Oregon's laws on alcohol advertising as far as where those billboards can be. But I'm willing to accept the idea that we need to curb the power of marketing and advertising for things that can be harmful to children. I'm willing to go with you there if you'll just give me some logical consistency on the issue. We're worried about your little sister seeing the pot ads. Meanwhile, McDonald's is selling Happy Meals that are tied directly into Frozen. Little Elsa is leading your little sister there to consuming fat-laden, salt-laden carbohydrate gut bombs. Hell, go down the cereal aisle of any major store and look at all the cartoons and bright, flashy colors and logos and messaging, all at the child's eye level, designed to market to them. If we really want to go there, I'm fine with it. I just want logical consistency. If we're so scared for the kids seeing alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, strip club, fast food, candy, cereals, breakfast, you know, sugary breakfast cereals, sodas. You want to set a rule, I'm fine as long as we all have to obey that rule. If the reason you're giving me is that we're afraid for the kids getting enticed to use something that's harmful, something that's not for kids, something that's for adults, something that should require an adult level of wisdom before one consumes it, then let's just be consistent about it. If it's an adult thing, if it's sex or drugs, then it can't be advertised at all. And all the manufacturers have to put it in white labels with black, Arial black font, no larger than 18 point, right? If you're going to get that nitty gritty on restricting our First Amendment rights of commercial speech on this, fine, but let's do it consistently. Let's set up a rule. Let's decide what's fair. But let's make everybody play by that rule, including the alcohol industry. It's just ridiculous that we continue to be singled out because now we're legalizing marijuana. And oh my God, we better restrict the hell out of it or else people will use it. Oh my goodness, people will use it. We can't have that. And as far as being worried about your kid or your sister, being worried about what age they should be exposed to certain things, they're already exposed. They already know somewhat what's going on here. They know marijuana is legal. They know it's something adults use. When you get all uptight about whether or not they're seeing that, when you want to try to hide that and shield it from them, all you do is give them the idea that it's something forbidden and something provocative and interesting. We found that with the anti-drug ads of the late 80s, early 90s. We found that, you know, scientifically validated this, that all they did was make kids more curious about drugs by painting them as some forbidden fruit, something that everybody was doing and something that was so popular and they had to resist it, made kids go, I wonder what is all this marijuana talk about? Gosh, all the kids are doing it to be cool. That sounds interesting. I believe, now again, my standard disclaimer, I have no children that I'm aware of. I have no background or justification for my belief in this, but I believe the best way to deal with kids and raise kids in the real world is to let them see the real world and then be honest with them and forthcoming in helping them understand what it is they are seeing, not trying to hide it from them.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Exactly. Well, folks, it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. That means we have to get to our union-mandated safety briefing. And in celebration of the Green Bay Packers dealing Eddie Lacy to the Seahawks so he can, I don't know, play a full game or two or three with them, we're loading up the Packers pipe. Be back right after this. We're going to talk about government marijuana and how it sucks.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
And I think, personally, that they should legalize drugs, all drugs, so that they can control them, tax them, provide prevention and treatment programs just like they do for alcohol.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. It's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you. Say that.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Warning. It's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 22 after the hour, and we're taking a look at a piece in the Washington Post up there on the Wonk blog by Christopher Ingram, who we refer to quite a bit here on the show, and Tawhid Chappelle. Joined up in this particular article. The title of it caught my eye because I am friends with the two remaining federal medical marijuana patients. That would be LV Musica here in Oregon and Irv Rosenfeld in Florida. And on numerous occasions, I have seen their marijuana. They get these tins, these big old like coffee can sized tins filled with, and I think one of them gets 8 ounces a month, the other one gets 9 ounces a month, somewhere around there, around a half pound each that they're getting of pre-filled cannabis cigarettes. And they're not joints, they are actually like rolled in a cigarette machine type of thing. And it's some of the swaggiest, lousiest weed I have ever seen. And I've been to Missouri. I lived in Idaho. I've seen ditchweed. The government is growing ditchweed, basically. And the piece, government marijuana looks nothing like the real stuff, see for yourself, that's up on the Washington Post today, does such a fantastic job of this. And I'll put it up here on the main screen just to give you, this is from the Washington Post. On the left, they're comparing commercial medical marijuana, some of the stuff that you could get here in Oregon, in California, Washington, anywhere, any medical marijuana state, versus the waggy sticks and stems and seeds and dust that's above me there in the government marijuana side. They are pointing out that the investigators, the researchers, who have to go through and jump through all these hoops with National Institutes of Drug Abuse and the FDA just to get marijuana for a study, just to be approved to study it at all, they don't get to use the stuff on the left, actual medical marijuana that patients are currently using and gaining vast medical benefit from. They don't get to use that. They're stuck with the stuff on the right. They have to use the government's swaggy ditch weed. And so how in the world are they supposed to get any real world results? How are they supposed to know that marijuana is actually giving the benefits that it gives if, you get it, don't you? There's a very good reason the government is growing substandard weed. It's because they don't want it to be proven to be beneficial to people. They want to keep as much of its benefits hidden as possible. Now, the weed that you're looking at, by the way, from these pictures, is from Dr. Sue Sisley. She's been a guest on the show numerous times. And she told PBS NewsHour, quote, "It doesn't resemble cannabis. It doesn't smell like cannabis." She said that on the PBS NewsHour in a piece there that's entitled, "Scientists say the government's only pot farm has moldy samples and no federal testing standards." This is all from the federal farm at the University of Mississippi. Rick Doblin from MAPS says, quote, "This shows that NIDA is completely inadequate as a source of marijuana for drug development research. They're in no way capable of assuming the rights and responsibilities for handling a drug that we're hoping to be approved by the FDA as prescription medicine." The other piece on this, Jake Brown, he was a cannabis critic for the Denver Post up at the Cannabist. He says, quote, "This is flat out not a usable form of cannabis. In 2 decades of smoking weed, I've never seen anything that looks like that. People typically smoke the flower of the plant, but here you can clearly see stems and leaves in there as well, parts that should be discarded. Inhaling that would be like eating an apple, including the seeds inside it and the branch it grew on." Now, potency-wise, according to the report, they're maxing out at 13% THC. But that's according to the U.S. government. They're saying it's 13% THC. Dr. Sisley took one of NIDA's strains that they said was 13% THC, found it was closer to 8% THC. By comparison, according to the labs that test medical marijuana in Colorado, the typical commercial weed is about 19% THC. Typical. And some of the higher end strains are pushing 30% THC or more. And Doblin said, quote, "NIDA's marijuana is fine if you want to do academic research. Studies that look at how marijuana affects the body in a laboratory setting, for instance. But it doesn't pass muster if you want to know how marijuana use is affecting people in the real world, or you want to run highly controlled medical experiments like the ones they're working on. They're not even testing for contaminants, yeast, mold, or stuff that they're requiring to be tested at the state level. They've mold and yeast on these samples that Colorado or Washington would never let people sell." Now, they did email to, they emailed out to the folks at NIDA for a comment. And the folks at NIDA said, quote, "There has been some emerging interest from the research community for a wider variety of marijuana and marijuana products. NIDA does plan on growing some additional marijuana this year and harvest some high THC material that will likely be above 13% THC. Okay, well, thanks for getting on that. Get right on that, NIDA. Take us away from this. Oh my God, look at this. That's my worst nightmare weed. I've lived with that weed. I've seen the Denver Post guy. He's been fortunate. He's lived in Colorado. I've been to Idaho and I've gotten that stuff. I've dealt with that kind of marijuana. It's just ridiculous to me that these researchers can be in a medical marijuana state, like Dr. Sisley was working in Arizona. They can be in a medical marijuana state, and right down the street, there could be a dispensary. And a patient could go into that dispensary and get some of the finest cannabis products in the entire world. But Dr. Sisley can't. The one researcher that the federal government has given the approval to test actual marijuana on actual human beings, not a simulator, not a survey, not a meta-analysis, not a synthetic cannabinoid, actual weed on actual patients, can't use the stuff that's right down the street. That's some of the best marijuana on the planet. He has to get it shipped in from Mississippi. Like Mississippi weed that looks like that. Oh my God. And this is by design, folks. This is exactly the way they want it to be. They don't want to put in any care or consideration into the cannabis plants they're growing. They've been growing them really just because they had to, kind of, under the single convention treaties, the UN treaties that govern how the countries, the signatories, can regulate controlled substances. It mandates that if they're growing a controlled substance, it has to be grown at one location, controlled by the federal government, has all sorts of security requirements and so forth. And there is need to maintain some sort of crop for testing and for other purposes. But the purposes aren't the purposes of healing people, of treating their illnesses and disabilities. It's the purposes of finding out that when people smoke it, they get high, so we can justify putting them in cages. That's what they keep growing weed at University of Mississippi for. Also, because they were forced to by the decisions in the cases that Robert Randall and others brought forth in the late 70s, they filed suit. Robert Randall filed suit against the federal government for prosecuting for marijuana because he said he's got glaucoma. If he didn't smoke weed, he's going to go blind. And the U.S. courts agreed, said he had a medical necessity defense. He had a medical reason and required the federal government provide him with some way to get this without breaking the law. And so they put together that University of Mississippi pot farm to comply with this investigative new drug program, to supply cannabis to that program, which is still supplying this same lousy, moldy, contaminated, sticks and stems and seeds-ridden weed at the tune of about a half pound a month every month. That's the weed that continues to get smoked or is intended for the smoking of the medical marijuana patients that remain, the two that remain, one in Florida, one in Oregon. Now, Ellie Musica is also an Oregon medical marijuana patient. So she has legal access under state law to the finer cannabis products that are provided here. But if that were discovered, if it were discovered that she was actually using the state legal marijuana, she might be in trouble from the feds for not using the lousy dirt weed that they're giving her. That's the only weed that's legally allowed to be distributed under federal law, you see. And poor Irv, he's out there in Florida. If he wants to find, well, they've got medical marijuana now, but up to this point, if he wanted to find any decent medicine to treat his musculoskeletal or his skeletal condition, he'd have to get it from people on the streets, from illicit sources, at risk of federal and state prosecution. It's just something that we will look back on. I'm hoping I live long enough to look back on this and look at it like we looked at our period of internment of the Japanese Americans in World War II, how we look back at Jim Crow laws, how we look back at slavery, how we look back at child labor, how we look back at the slaughter of the Native Americans and the bison, and we look back at those times in our history and go, oh my God, we were so barbaric back then, but we've evolved, we've become more civilized. That's where I want our treatment of cannabis to be placed in the annals of history. I want us to look back on that and go, oh my God, can you believe how cruel we were? Can you believe that we put people in cages who were merely trying to treat their cancer or their pain or their seizures or their nausea with non-toxic cannabis. Someday that'll be the case. Until then, we've got to live through this nightmare, day by day, child by child, patient by patient, prisoner by prisoner. This madness, born of racism and control. We got to take a break, and when we come back, we won't talk about that weed anymore. It's giving me a headache. We got more coming up here on the Russ Belville Show. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're going to take a look now at politics in Hawaii, because headline caught my attention, and it's also got some updates on some other bills that are, looks like they're going to die in the Hawaii legislature. But this one bill in the Hawaii legislature looks as though it's moving forward. It's a bill to replace the term medical marijuana with medical cannabis. Everywhere in state law, on state letterheads, everywhere in the program and the documents, websites and so forth, they're going to change medical marijuana to medical cannabis. Now, on first read of that, I'm fine with that. That's great. Because a lot of what people are consuming as a medical product from the cannabis plant isn't marijuana. We've had this discussion many times. For those of you who are new, let me fill you in. Cannabis is the plant. Marijuana is the dried flowering tops of the female of that species, usually seedless, that are prepared for smoking, either by pipe, bong, or joint. In other words, cannabis is a general catch-all term for the cannabis plant. It's the scientific name of that species of plant. It's cannabis. There's nothing wrong with that. Completely agreed. But marijuana is not a bad term. Marijuana is a specific, precise term that refers to one particular preparation of cannabis. Marijuana, sensimilia, something you dry and roll and smoke, okay? But people that are using medical cannabis products aren't always smoking flower, aka marijuana. They may be using oils or tinctures or lotions or creams or patches or whatever else you might think of. And such things aren't marijuana. They are not the dried flowering tops of the cannabis plant. They are oils or extractions or whatever. So on the first read of this article, I'm like, I'm cool with that. Call it the Medical Cannabis Act. Call it the Medical Cannabis Department, the Medical Cannabis Program. That's fine because it's accurate, right? But where I have a problem with it is in the way the legislator who's proposing this is arguing for it. He's a Democrat from Oahu named Senator Mike Gabbard. The bill is Senate Bill 786, and he says, the word marijuana originated as, quote, slang term, as a, quote, slang term, and carries, quote, prejudicial implications rooted in racial stereotypes, end quote, from the early 20th century when the drug was first criminalized in the United States. Now you lost me, Senator. You lost me. I'm all for changing the name to medical cannabis, and I'd still support that. I just disagree with your implication, your condemnation of the word marijuana. Marijuana is not a bad term. Marijuana is not a racist term. Marijuana is not a prejudicial term. Where people get all wound up on this is when they learn that marijuana was a slang term used by Mexican migrants who came to America in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They smoked their flowering sensimilia, and they called it marijuana. It was a slang term of theirs. Then, as there was resentment from, they're coming to take our jobs, in order to prosecute the Mexicans, in order to send the lawman after them, they criminalized the smoking of cannabis. And to promote that, they called it marijuana. They specifically adopted the slang term being used by the people that were smoking it in order to demonize it. Because the word marijuana, a Spanish word, scared the hell out of people, particularly if they were racist toward the Hispanics that were coming in to take your jobs. The fact that those racists picked up on the slang term and used it for their racist purposes does not make the term itself racist. The Hispanics who came to this country who were saying marijuana were not saying it as a racist word. It was just their culture's word for that particular thing. There are similar examples all across the world. In Jamaica, they call it ganja. In South Africa, they call it dacha. Most of the places in the world, they call it cannabis. But marijuana, a term used by Hispanics, is no more racist than dacha, a term used by South Africans, and is no more racist than ganja, a term used by Jamaicans. If it had been Jamaicans who were coming to take your jabs back in the 1900s, William Randolph Hearst and Harry J. Anslinger would have started calling it ganja all the time to scare the hell out of white people. And we'd be having this argument right now as to whether or not ganja is a racist word. The fact that people used a word for racist purposes does not make the word itself per se racist. Now, there are obviously some words that are per se racist. I won't list them. You can probably guess most of them. They are in all contexts by all speakers racist words. Marijuana is not one of them. So quit this demonization of marijuana as a term. The idea that it has prejudicial implications rooted in racial stereotypes is only true if you think there's something wrong with Mexicans. Right? The stereotype was that the Mexicans were lazy. It's because they smoked their demon reefers and it made them all lazy, right? That's the evil racist stereotype, right? And so that was supposedly passed on to marijuana now so that anybody, even the white kids that are smoking, are going to become lazy. And so that lazy is by osmosis, by transference, I guess, the transitive property of racism, I guess, is now ascribed to marijuana. Okay, but I don't follow. I'm sorry, I just don't follow it. Because today is not 1910 or 20 or 30. People now, even in their 60s, even baby boomer people who came to smoke marijuana did not recognize that term as being slang being spoken by the feared Mexican migrants. That was just what the thing was called. Hey, you got some weed, got some reefer, got some marijuana. That's all it was. Nobody was saying marijuana in a racist way. Now, we do know that when Nixon, you know, ramped up the war on drugs and the Controlled Substances Act, we got that quote from Ehrlichman, I think it was, who said, yeah, we knew by criminalizing marijuana and heroin and associating with the blacks and the hippies that we could infiltrate their organizations and dismantle their organizations and such. We know that. But that was using the law, not using the word. The word marijuana had already been long established by that point. I think sometimes some of these don't say marijuana, it's racist people are suffering from magic bullet thinking. And there's a lot of magic bullet thinking in the cannabis community. A lot of it. And what magic bullet thinking is reducing problems to very simple, black and white, one-step solutions. The magic bullet that kills the werewolf, right? The one simple thing we can do, right? There's always some guy, I get an email about twice a year from somebody who's poured through legal code. I've found the loophole. I've found the one thing that will invalidate all prohibition everywhere. Right? Like there'll be one lawsuit and boom, the whole thing's gone. So there's some magical bullet thinking here in this. If we just only say cannabis, there's no negative connotations to cannabis. If we all just say cannabis, people won't hate us so much. I'm sorry to have to inform you that the reason they hate you has nothing to do with what you're calling what you're smoking. It has to do with the fact that you're smoking it in the first place. Call it cannabis, call it marijuana, ganja, dhaka, weed, pot, reefer. Doesn't matter. They hate you because of who you are, not necessarily what you're smoking. They hate our culture. They hate our libertine enjoyment of our senses. Calling us cannabis isn't going to help it. Not going to change that overnight. What's going to change it is people being exposed to you and me. People knowing you and me. People recognizing that someone who smokes marijuana isn't a stereotype. Someone that smokes marijuana is a coworker, a friend, a family member. Someone they play pickup basketball with, or someone they've been to a concert with, or whatever. That's what changes the hearts and minds, not whether we call it marijuana or call it cannabis. The names that gay people were being called didn't matter. It mattered that gay people came out of the closet and made friends with people and became publicly visible. That's what made it harder to oppress them. The same goes for us. It doesn't matter what we're calling marijuana or cannabis. And again, I don't have the problem with people who want to call it cannabis and want to eschew the use of the word marijuana. That's fine if that's your personal, you know, perspective on the issue. Where I'm saying the problem comes is when you want to try to enforce that language correctness with everyone else. Because as I said, us coming out and being known and friendly with others in the mainstream is what's going to move the needle on this. What's going to change these laws. But if the first meeting they have with you is you calling them a racist, it may backfire. And I know you're not calling them racist, but understand how people hear things isn't necessarily what you're saying. Right? Like some well-meaning person sees you with your pot leaf shirt on at some event and comes up and says, hey, are you guys here like talking about marijuana? Is this about some marijuana thing? And you whip around and say, well, actually, we call it cannabis. That's the scientific word for it. Marijuana is a racist word. You know what that person just heard? They heard you call them stupid and racist. You were too stupid to know it's cannabis. And you're a racist who uses the word marijuana. And that's not going to change their hearts and minds on our side. They're going to say, wow, pot smokers are dicks. So that's not helpful. Educate people is fine. Explain to them that, you know, when they say, is this a thing about marijuana? And the way you could respond to that and keep your integrity intact to say, yeah, we're here promoting cannabis research. We're promoting a cannabis bill. We're promoting the end of cannabis prohibition. And then they might say, well, what, cannabis prohibition? You say, well, yeah, under the law, it's called marijuana, but the actual scientific word for it's cannabis. Now you've managed to like include them. You managed to bring them in on some trivia, maybe. Like, oh wow, they'll go to their friends. Did you know marijuana was called is actually called cannabis? You've brought them in a friendly way. without saying, well, we don't say this and you said this. It's more like, just say what you say. Just call it cannabis. And from the context clue, they'll pick up that that's what marijuana is. And if not, they'll ask you, what's this? What cannabis? What's this cannabis thing? And then you're doing them a favor by educating them when they asked for it, rather than standing on your little high horse lecturing. Anyway, we'll see how that bill turns out. When we come back, I'll catch you up on the other Hawaii bills that don't look like they're going anywhere, unfortunately. But we'll cross our fingers. Back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com and follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Drugs take away the dream from every child's heart and replace it with a nightmare.
Okay, maybe you're high too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 52 after the hour, and as promised, we'll wrap up this discussion of the bills moving forward and not moving forward in the state of Hawaii, or as Wiz Khalifa would say, the illegally occupied sovereign nation of Hawaii. Senate Bill 786 is going to change the word medical marijuana to medical cannabis. Looks like it's doing pretty well. It made it through the Senate and is on its way over to the House. Another bill that's moving forward is Senate Bill 305. This would require dispensaries to retain video footage and recordings of their operations for at least 45 days. Security footage, 45 days. That could cost you some money, couldn't it? Expect that dispensary price to rise a little bit. Now, the current law doesn't address any data retention requirements, and it actually says that DOH's administrative rules require surveillance to be kept 365 days, a full year. The bill says keeping it for a year is going to be a problem, because to keep that much footage, you got to decrease the frame rate, right, to have enough storage space. And then you decrease the frame rate, it's got that skip kind of effect. You don't see as much. So they want to reduce that to 45 days. So that sounds reasonable. Then there's House Bill 263. This would impose a general excise tax on a percentage of dispensaries' gross income and put it in a special fund for drug recognition training for law enforcement officers. Yeah. Okay. We'll see. That one looks like it's moving forward, but there's some other proposals that look like they have died. Legalizing marijuana for everyone over age 21. So no legalization through the Hawaii legislature. Decrim also failed to get through the Hawaii legislature. They had a proposal to exempt military veterans from paying medical marijuana registration fees. Free medical marijuana cards for vets. That died. They proposed a cap on retail prices for medical marijuana and manufactured marijuana products. You know, these put a price cap on how much people are charging for this medical marijuana. Nope, that didn't make it. They proposed a limit on THC levels in manufactured marijuana products and warning labels on packaging. That looks like it's failed. They had a proposal to expand the list of qualifying conditions under the medical use of marijuana in Hawaii. They wanted to add lupus, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, autism, anxiety, depression, insomnia, and stress. None of those made it through. There was a proposal to establish state-regulated collectives to allow patients with excess marijuana to sell it to other collective members. Nope, that's not happening. There was a proposal to reassess, not to actually reclassify, but just to reassess the state's classification of marijuana as a Schedule I drug. Nope, that's still in effect. You gotta love that. You gotta love these states that have active medical marijuana programs, and at the same time, they keep marijuana in Schedule I of their state law, which almost always says it has no medical benefit. What the hell are those people doing in that other program then? Right? Anyway, what else they have here? They had a continuation of the caregiver program that's currently set to end in 2018, allowing dispensaries to sell edible cannabis products and allowing felons to work in the marijuana industry 5 years after completing their prison sentence. That didn't go through. So the caregiver program is still set to end in 2018. Establishing state regulated, I'm sorry, I already saw that one. Establishing a minimum blood concentration content of THC for driving under the influence, that failed. Well, there's some good things going on in Hawaii. And a ban on marijuana products created to appeal to children did not make its way through. So there we go. That's your update on what's happening in Hawaii. And some good, some bad. Of course, not establishing a THC driving limit is the best thing that we've heard coming out of Hawaii. And these bans on these products designed to appeal to children are always troublesome, right? Of course, we don't want to be seen as enticing kids to use cannabis, but at what point is something not appealing to adults, but only appealing to kids, right? Like almost everything I can think that appeals to kids appeals to adults, at least when it comes to things like gummy bears and brownies and cookies and crackers and such. I like gummy bears. I like that stuff. A lot of adults do. So what is it that makes it something that's appealing to kids? Just the fact that kids like it, even if adults also like it? Like, we're going to completely restrict the choices that adults are allowed to make based on whether kids like those choices? Is that where we're going with this? And again, it's troublesome because I don't see it happening in any other sphere in American life for adults. We're not restricting adults from being able to drink Mike's Hard Grape Soda just because kids like grape soda. We always have this focus on the marijuana appealing to the kids. When what we're seeing under legalization is that it's appealing to kids less. As we legalize it, they're getting bored of it. They're thinking it's passé. They're thinking it's the boring Chardonnay that mom and dad drink, right? It's just nothing to the kids these days. Well, if you were expecting logic and consistency, you picked the wrong country, folks. Although I don't know that there's any that are logical and consistent, at least in all spheres of influence. But that's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. And coming up on the rest of this week, tomorrow, we'll be speaking with Doug Fine. We'll get an update on what's happening in industrial hemp all across this country. I'm sure we'll talk about New Mexico, his home state, vetoing hemp again. Also, on Thursday from Law Enforcement Action Partnership, we've got a former FBI agent talking to us. That'll be fun. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
They will smoke weed and sell pot at state fairs.
All right, maybe you're high, too. Good for you.